Om Jnana Timrandasya Jnananjana Salakaya Chakshur Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Mukham Karati Vachalam Pangolam Hayate Girim Yat Kripa Tamahang Vande Sri Gurun Dina Tarinam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Jatapada Kamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavangstha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragana Tang Vitang Tang Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Sri Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakan Vitangscha Ananda Leela Maya Vigrahaya Himava Divyascha Visundaraya Tasmai Mahapremarasa Pradaya Chaitanya Chandraya Namo Namaste. Yes, Prabhu, some question?
Dhanavad Maharaj. We have a question from Purushottam Das, Salt Lake City. Dear Goswami Maharaj, Srila Guru Maharaj has famously said, the environment is friendly and adjust yourself. What constitutes a proper and progressive adjustment? Is such an adjustment solely internal? Or would the dichotomy of internal and external indicate mental speculation and a derailment of bhakti into jnana and karma respectively? My sincere appreciation and dandavas to all who make this facility possible.
Hare Krishna. We know many times Srila Guru Maharaj counseled devotees to wait and see. And we don't want that to degenerate into what is called cant, C-A-N-T, means you repeat something to the point of where it loses its meaning. Right? Hare Krishna. So we know that's working. And we'll see, someone will put wait and see on the wall. You know? But that's just an expression that Guru Maharaj was invoking. He's not the origin of wait and see. It's an expression, an English language expression. But he employed that at particular times. But, so we should consider the context of when he said that, and also what he said in its entirety. So one of the first times I heard him say that, he said, wait and see. Followed by, he said, what leads to what? He said, which way the divine will moves next? And then he said, all events are not meant to please me. The implication being that, like, there's another expression, not a blade of grass moves without the will of God. So when he says all events are not meant to please me, someone can say, well, yeah, that rightfully can be said about everyone, anyone and everyone. But is there someone for whom all events are meant to please? Right. In the background, an overview. So, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells Arjuna, Bhoktaram Yajna Tapasam Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. Bhokta means the enjoyer. Bhoktaram yagya tapasam. He said, so of all this yagya, all this tapa, what, it's another way of saying it, it's only meaningful if it's meant to please Krishna. Right? There's another famous, what does it say? Yadi Hares, something, Yadi Hares, Tapashata Tatkem, Na Yadi Hares, something. It's saying, if whatever you're doing, the end result, your tapasya, for example, austerities, saying, if the end result is not taking you toward Krishna, right? Satisfying Krishna, then what is the use of austerities? And then it reversed itself and said, and if you're what you're doing is pleasing to Krishna, what is the use of austerities? So what we take away from that is the central point of consideration is what is pleasing or satisfying to Krishna. Bhoktaram yagya tapasam sarva loka maheshwara. You know, I'm controlling everything. Ishvara parama Krishna. So when they say, not a blade of grass moves without the will of God, and he's controlling that. If he's controlling even the blades of grass, what to speak of more significant movements. And we notice that, you know, so many blades of grass are moving without our permission. Right? So many things are happening. We did not give permission for these things to happen. So then we could assume, most likely, we're not the supreme controller. Yet, we're trying to structure our lives and exert a certain amount of control. You know, like people say, you gotta take control. What, of the universe? Or, you know, karmic circumstances that you've generated, that you're responsible for? Manu, tamasa bahurupena beshtita karma hetuna. What we see before us in the form of so many different life forms, like Padma Purana, Jalaja, Navalakani, Stavra, Lakavingshati, etc. What does he say? It's very interesting. Whatever you might see or observe, he says, Veshtita karma hetuna. This is a karmic dress. You're dressed in your karma. It's the cause of you assuming this particular type of dress. Right. So many events before that led to this present iteration. So you're surrounded by karmic circumstances that you've generated. There's individual karma, collective karma. So what is left to you other than interpretation of the events that you find yourself in? So sometimes Srila Guru Maharaj also would say, as long as we're casting blame on the environment, on others, you know, the dancer blames the dance floor, right? He says, as long as we're casting blame at others, upon others or the environment, circumstances, so many things like that, other people, what is that saying? You know, hell is other people, right? As long as that is the mentality, he's saying, then you're going to be in this world a long time. He said, but if you can take responsibility and to this degree, not just like, and take control of your life. That's not what he's saying. He's saying, take a responsibility, meaning whatever situation you find yourself in, you're responsible for that. It may appear this way, that way, another person said this, you found some unfair thing happened, saying whatever. Actually, he said, when you come to the realization that you alone are the sole culprit in the world in which you live, he said, then your days here are numbered. That's the beginning of coming out of this plane, is that realization. I alone am the sole culprit. I mentioned the other day when Guru Maharaj was talking about something, one devotee said, oh, Maharaj, I'm just feeling sorry for, you know, the innocent people in this world. And Guru Maharaj said, there are no innocent people. And we're thinking, no, but what about that cute baby I saw the other day? said, there are no innocent people. We have all betrayed our Lord. You wouldn't be in this world if not, I mean, for that. Right? Whoever's here, unless, you know, some, all right, we can make an example, some divine associate of the Lord descended in this plane to take others back to home, back to Godhead. Other than that, right, this is the situation. So we find ourselves inescapably in karmic circumstances. In karmic circumstances that are seem to be inescapable. You can modify it a little bit this way or that way. And what does the Bhagavatam say? Tasyeva hetu prayate ta kovido nalabhyate yad brahmatam uparyada. This means wandering throughout the length and breadth of the universe, saying, You're on the basis of, you know, action, where every action equal and opposite reaction, the karmic circumstances that you've generated, it's more or less fated to play out in a particular way in terms of happiness and suffering. So don't waste your energy merely trying to minimize the suffering aspect and maximize the happiness aspect. It's already baked into the karmic cake. Okay. But rather, direct your energy elsewhere. Right? And inner culture, self-discovery, self-realization. And that's where we come to the necessity of interpretation. And by that, I just don't mean like whimsical interpretation, but sadhu, shastra, guru, vaishnava, to see through the eyes of scriptures. Right? What does that say? In other words, tvam bhakti yoga paribhavita ritsaroja aseshu tekshita pato nanunata pungsang shruta ikshita pato. This is the path. What is this path? This is the path of where you see, see through hearing. That's how you see, by hearing. What does it mean? Shruti, Shabda Brahma, divine sound, revealed truth. When you're under the influence of revealed truth, then you can have a proper perspective of things, right? Otherwise known as Sambandha Gyan, right? In this context, sambandhya means the right perspective, how to see, how to interpret life, events, ourselves. Atma-samiksha means self-analysis, but not just analyzing the karmic, the exterior karmic self, right, which is the really, although it's called psychotherapy, it doesn't even begin to approach the soul. It's dealing basically with, you know, ego, intellect, mind, different subtle coverings of the soul. But actual soul is another thing. And that we hear about, you know, sadhu, shastra, guru, vaishnav, revealed truth. It's not something that you discover empirically, or, you know, by the process of elimination. So how to interpret these events that we're in? And what should be acknowledged first? Because again, we just say, oh, Guru Maharaj said the environment is friendly. You know, that all these things have to be understood in context. Right? The words he said before that, the words he said after that. Otherwise, out of context, it can sound, with a C, like casual or lacking a certain sensitivity or insight, right? Or being dismissive or platitudinal, right? So he's acknowledged that there are things that are happening in the environment that are a cause of upset to us. We're suffering, we're upset, we're disturbed, we feel wronged, things are unjust, unfair, why is this happening to me? I mentioned that a lady wrote a book called, I think it was a lady, Why Do Bad Things Happen to Good People? Right. I didn't read the book. But I know, I thought, you don't need to write a book about this. There's a one-word answer to this question, karma. That's why bad things happen to apparently good people who seem to have done nothing to warrant or justify this kind of thing happening to them. It's the basis of some past reaction. And no less than Mahaprabhu himself in the Shikshastakam, where in the fourth sloka, Nadanam Najanam Nasundarim Kavitamba Jagadisha Kamaye Mama Janmani Janmanishare Bhavatad Bhakti Rahoituki Twayi. So the Janmani Janmani part, Guru Maharaj says, and this is Mahaprabhu expressing a particular type of sentiment. And he says, certainly, because of my karma, I will have to be born again and again. He's saying that. And how should we think? Right? Somehow devotees think they've got an exemption clause or something, that if they're just, you know, good in this lifetime, they're going to go to heaven, you know, kind of thing. But what's expressed here, he's saying, Janmani Janmani Shri, certainly, as my karma plays out, I'll have to be born lifetime after lifetime. It's more healthy to think this way. And then what did he say? So considering that, Bhavatad Bhakti Rahoituki, just let me have connection with your devotees. That would be the greatest, you know, guarantee or gift to me, that in these upcoming lifetimes, if I can have the association of devotees. That's a genuine prayer. Not, oh my Lord, put an end to this suffering. That's the prayer of a karmi, right, so-called karmi. I know we don't use that word anymore. It was very popular in ISKCON. So he's praying in that way, right? Which means, again, I'm using it in this context as a way to interpret circumstances. Right? So, Guru Maharaj's saying should be understood in this way. He will mention, first, in the Bhagavad Gita, what's recommended is toleration, right? What is it? Matra, sparsha, stukontaya, shitoshno, sukha, dukha, da, agama, payano, nityas, tam, titikshasva, bharata. Krishna telling Arjuna, these karmic circumstances, they're like seasonal changes. Like we see here, the rainy season comes, temperature changes, you're in a particular climate, you have to make some adjustments. So, because you can't put an end to the rain, the snow, the heat, whatever. That is sukh and dukh, happiness and distress. So he said, the way they appear and vanish are just like seasonal changes. So what does he tell Arjuna? Titiksha, tolerate it. Tolerate that. Don't give it more energy than necessary. Right? And it also reminds me that Srila Guru Maharaj, this poet, one is Kalidas, the other is, I think, Magha, and they have similar verses about lotus and Chakravaka birds. And we know there's one lotus, this mystical lotus, who blooms in the evening. Right? Sometimes described as a blue lotus, white lotus, variously, like Chandrika, Shreya Kairava Chandrika, Chandrika. So, but, and this poetry, they're saying, so when the sun sets, these Chakravaka birds, they have this unique character or quality that they're mates, but they must separate at evening. And they have to wait again to come together. Right? So what's being told in the song, in the poetry, is upon sunrise, certain things are happy, like there's certain lotus that thrive at that time, they can come together. Well, at sunset, when the moon comes, then some have to go apart, and some thrive. And why it's being told is saying, this is the perpetual cycle. And actually, not even in only the mundane world, but in the spiritual world, so the only difference, one's Mahamaya, Yogamaya. Right? Yogamaya is Mahamaya, it's, you know, the cause of the suffering in this world. But Yogamaya is creating pastimes that induce separation to bring out a greater depth of heart. So we would say, from a high point of view of interpretation, it's going back to how does the heart see things? How is the heart going to interpret these events? So that sort of thing is given there to say, it's always like that. So the bottom line being, so don't be too, almost like a Gita advice, don't be celebrate too much when things seem to be going your way, and don't be too devastated when they're not. Try the, you know, an even keel. Or in another place, Guru Maharaj would say, if you go deep, when he's talking about dive deep in the reality, if you go deep in the ocean, whatever's on the surface, the waves going this way, that way, and so much turbulence, he said, if you go deeper, you're unaffected by it. So again, what does it mean deeper? That vision, the way of seeing things. So when those unhappy, we're visited by unhappy circumstances, first line of defense in Gita is tolerate. But then, when I say, this is intolerable. Then I'm thinking of Gurudev, he would say, as he sat beneath Trinadapi, Sunichena, Tororapi, Sahishnuna, Amani na manadena kirtini asadahari. The toror eva sahira, be more tolerant than a tree. He said, it means tolerating what is intolerable. Because if you can tolerate something that's just difficult to tolerate, that's one level. He ratcheted it up to another level. He said, what it means is tolerating which is intolerable. Right? That's a higher level, he said, or honoring someone who's not worthy of honor. So, in the conventional sense. So, first line of defense, toleration. But that, you can tell that it almost, in some instances, has a little bit of lingering resentment or begrudging, like, all right, I have to tolerate this. But Guru Maharaj will tell us, in the Bhagavatam, it takes it to another level. That's in the Brahma Stuti, the prayers of Brahma, which is Tattenu Kampam Susamikshamano Bunjana Evatma Pritam Vipakam. Ends on Mukti Pade Sadayavag. So here, it's saying from a deeper level of seeing and interpretation, We'll remember earlier in the Gita, he said, after Bhaktaram Yajnatapasam Sarvalokamaheshwaram, next line, Suhridam Sarvabhutanam. Yes, everything's meant for my enjoyment. Yes, I'm in control of everything. I mean, even these unhappy circumstances that are happening here. Ultimately, yes. And then what's next line? Suhridam, Suhrit. But I'm your best friend. I'm your dearest friend. More than you realize or know. So that means whatever's happening to you is not unfriendly. Krishna is not inimical to us. This is not, you know, like the Judeo-Christian God who's always, you know, like, do what I say or you're going to get the stick, right? Punishment. There are instances, known instances, where Krishna's taken his flute and tapped a cowherd boy. But they're like that. And the flute's made out of chinmoy, so it's not that rod of chastisement of the scary god. Right? He's saying, I'm your dearest friend. So then that means whatever's happening to us, even albeit unpleasant, is not with malintention, is not meant to take us down, and therefore friendly. When I remember in school, and it probably goes by various names, but like a pop quiz, a flash quiz, you understand, where the teacher will suddenly tell the students, all right, class, close your books. And everyone groans like, oh no. Why? As some people think, our teacher is so mean. Why is she doing this to us? It's not because she's mean, but what she's realized is, although everyone's making a show of, you know, reading the book, the subject materials, asking questions, she's uncertain how much they're actually absorbing. So this is, now close the books. I'm going to give you a little, you know, pop quiz, flash quiz, whatever you want to call it. And then we're going to know how much you're absorbing and which of the areas that need to be corrected or where you need to focus your attention on to get a better understanding. So it's something like that on the superficial level, these things are objectionable to us. But Guru Maharaj is saying, in the Bhagavatam, it says, not only tolerate, take it to a deeper level, saying, it's favorable. Krishna's not trying to take you down, but rather to promote you. Right? So therefore, in that sense, friendly. That's what he's saying. The environment is friendly. Right? But it's a way of seeing. What is the first mantra? The primal guru mantra. Agyanatam randasya gyananjana salakaya chaksur militam jena. Saying, my eyes were cataracted with ignorance, acquired prejudice, acquired tendency. So I'm not seeing clearly. And then what? Like surgical removal. What is it? LASIK? Anyway, with lasers now, they remove cataracts. So I like that because it's light, right? So that's what he's saying. By light, right, enlightened, I'm expressing my gratitude to Sri Guru who opened my eyes that were cataracted with ignorance. I wasn't seeing myself and my life circumstances properly. Right? So Guru Maharaj also gave an example on like a very high level. Not that we should imitate, but we should be aware. And he told in the life of Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj that, like we hear about Sukadev Goswami, that we think he's so beautiful and such a charming figure, But on his way to the assembly of Parikshit Maharaj, on the banks of the, you know, Jamuna, where the Bhagavatam was spoken, on his way there, children are throwing things at him, calling him names, mocking him, making fun of him. And then they see that who looked like a mad urchin, when he enters the assembly, although he's 16 years old and naked, that all these sages with their big long beard, they all stand and offer him the presidential seat in the assembly, because they were, Prabhupada says, expert in the art of physiognomy. Even by his physical form, they knew he was advanced, an enlightened soul. And additionally, he was legendary already. So, in the time of Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, like Bhaktavaduta Murtiye, Guru Maharaj says in the pranam to him, one of the pranams to him, like in Avadut, people, as young boys do, they mock, they tease, they make fun, they throw things. I mean, imagine, they were doing that to Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj. So if you think like, sometimes we think like, why am I being treated like this? I mean, I'm a devotee. When on a train ride, Calcutta, Navadeep, someone said to Srila Govinda Maharaj when he was Gaurindu Brahmachari, and he said, how come the sadhus get sick? They shouldn't get sick because, you know, they're protected by Krishna, this, that, and the other thing. And we see, you know, that they're visited by illness from time to time. And Gurudev said to them, he said, no, actually, it's the because they're escaping Maya, she's trying harder to get them. So we will see it visit upon them even more, not the opposite. Right? Bhakti Das Babaji Maharaj also said in his final days when he was diseased in so many ways, Guru Maharaj said, he would turn to me and go, this is your Vaishnava? Look at me. Look at what's happened to me. But Guru Maharaj said, as a way of saying, don't think that you will be exempt from these things because you're ostensibly pursuing a life of devotion. But rather, those who are on the verge of escaping are more likely to be attacked. So, and what to speak of such an exalted soul as Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, the mocking him, throwing things at him. But Guru Maharaj said his response was, rather than some ego, abhiman coming and chastising those, do you know who I am, kind of thing, he said, I know it's you, Krishna, who are behind all of this. You who are guiding their hands, they're picking up these things and throwing them. You who are putting these words in their mouth, making them, it's you, Krishna. I know that. And then he said, and I know also how to deal with you. So I will go to Ma Yashoda and lodge my complaint with her, and then she will chastise you. That's Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj's way of interpreting what's happening to him. We can't imitate that. But at least Guru Maharaj is saying, on the basis of what is presented in the Bhagavatam, that when we think about things more deeply, we can think that it must be for my betterment. Like once, someone was calling Srila Govinda Maharaj on the telephone and saying terrible things to him, right? You know, and like doing it repeatedly. So at one point, knowing it was that person again, I said, it was like gonna happen again. I said, Maharaj, you know, I can take the next call and like deal with this. And he said, yes, Maharaj, I know. He said, but I am thinking, why is Krishna allowing me to hear these things? I thought, this is the way. He could have dismissed that person as being insignificant or not even properly pursuing Vaishnavism easily. No one would have objected. But no ego, like man shunyata, called the bhavankur stage, man shunyata, the total absence of ego. He thought, why is Krishna letting these things being said into my ear? That he was more interested in, if there was some adjustment that he should make. It made him reflect upon himself internally or his circumstances and see if there was some need for correction. That was the proper way to interpret. That's what he means by saying the environment is friendly. Right? Means in the background. So he said, if you can adopt this angle of vision, he said, then between all events and circumstances, if you look deeply, he said, you'll see the friendly hand and the smiling face of Krishna. The veil will be removed, and you'll see the smiling face and the friendly hand of Krishna in the background. And we're here for spiritual culture. If someone's saying, oh, that's the greater souls, or how... You have to begin somewhere. And this is the advice that's being given to us. So maybe with tears in our eyes, or, you know, heavy heart, we may adopt this angle of vision for some relief. Yes, anything else?
There is one question from Gupta Govardhan. We have some stereotypes of personal relations with Guru, but really, what should they be? Should Guru know all the details of your individual situation and take care and give some advice? Or should you just serve him and that's it? Some people are hankering for the personal relations with their Guru, but what is it really? Is that for everyone? And some just say, I don't have any relations with my guru, actually. What to do then? Please give some advice.
Most disciples, for their the better part of their spiritual lives, will not be in close proximity to their guru. Even those who were will not be later for the better part of their lives, right? Srila Prabhupada himself said once, he said, I met with my Guru Maharaj maybe 10 times. Think of that, Prabhupada, 10 times. But those 10 times, what he was able to extract and what transpired between them. But so, for even if someone was an intimate server, for the most of their lifetime, it will be spent in separation. So, Srila Guru Maharaj will say that a real disciple is always living in the proximity or the zone of their guru by remembrance and thought culture. Right? They're remembering the instructions. And that's how it is most of the time. Think Guru Maharaj, he joined Gaudiya Math in 1927. Saraswati Thakur left the world at the end of 36, beginning of 30. So approximately 10 years. And then lived another almost 40 years in the absence of some physical proximity. But his understanding of Srila Saraswati Thakur and his Su Siddhanta, just living, growing, developing, went deeper. So Guru Maharaj will say, the disciple has a limited capacity to actually view Guru, who in this context is virtually unlimited. But with the growth and development of the disciple, so will their vision of guru evolve and develop. And sometimes he would give examples like, you know, we hear of Vani and Vapu. Vapu means like form, and you could say physical association. Vani means instructions. So he said, you may, like we see now, pictures of a guru when they were younger, and then pictures of them 5 years later, 10 years later, 15 years later, and up to the present. You think, which form is the guru? Is that the form of the guru? When we're on the veranda in Calcutta with Srila Govinda Maharaj, and there's that famous picture of Bhaktivinod Thakur where he has the beard, and he, you know, and looked up, and that was on his wall on the veranda, and he said, and to think that he is a 14-year-old girl in Goloka Vrindavan. So, what is the form of the guru? Right. That we may see this evolving in terms of what we're able to observe externally. So then we'll understand. Then it must be the divine current that's in the agent, the inspired side of the Vaishnava, that divine current that's consistent throughout all the different variations of the formal manifestation of guru. And not to ignore that or diminish that, but that can't be our focus exclusively. So just as we see that change, right, over time, so we observe physical changes, what we're rather advised is to observe internal evolution and change, to become aware of that. So, for example, in Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's concluding words of Chaitanya Charitamritam, he says that when he looks very deeply, and his vision is, he possesses unparalleled depth of such vision. He says he sees Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Gaurkishore Das Babaji Maharaj as Gadadhar Pandit and Swarup Damodar. Right? Doesn't mean that they're them literally, but that same quality and function. And Guru Maharaj, on the same theme, will say, if I, again, quoting Saraswati Thakur, if I look at my guru deeply, right, deep consideration of Sri Guru, he said, then I come to understand there are the assistants, and then the sakis, and then ultimately Srimati Radharani herself. Right. So, and Prabhupada mentions this in the first chapter, Chaitanya Charitamritam, in the purports, saying, you know, the spiritual master is either seen as, you know, the representation of Nityananda Prabhu or a confidential associate of Srimati Radharani. So that sort of depth is, and seeing is possible through the internal development of the disciple. But all along, they shall want to serve. Right? But then again, Raghunath Das Goswami, Vilapa Kusumanjali, favorite sloka of Srila Guru Maharaj, Dashayate mama rasastu rasastu satyam, sakayate mama namostu namostu nityam. Saying, my focus is on service and the least aspect. Sakya in this sense means more intimate service. He's saying, that is worshipable to me. That is, I hold above as worshipable. If there is no superior servitor there for me to serve under and be sheltered by, what would be my interest there? He's the Prayojan Tattva charge of this line. He's saying, my focus is on dasya. Right? And if out of service necessity to do more infinite, intimate, confidential service, I'm prepared to do that. But that's not what I hanker for. I'm a servitor. I'm an aspiring servitor. Mahaprabhu is saying, as place, you know, padaduli sadrusham vichintaya, Prabhupada would say, as a particle of dust at your holy lotus feet. What does that mean? Why the word dust? Because we understand dust, that's the least aspect, right, of anything, is dust, like a dust particle. It's another way of saying, you know, an atomic presence, the least possible connection is more than enough for me. Right? This is the prayer of the genuine devotees. It's in the prayer of Mahaprabhu. Right? It's in the prayers of Das Goswami. It's in all of the prayers. Right? But newly recruited neophytes, they're voyeuristically envisioning themselves as super servitors in the spiritual world. It's a hallucination. It's fiction. Right? Uddhava, he has intimate knowledge of the queens of Dwarka. He's Uddhava. Krishna says, Natata priyatama atma yonir na shankara. Na cha sankarshana na sri naivatma cha yatabhavan. There's no one more, Krishna says, there's no one more dear to me than Uddhava. Not Atmabhu Brahma, not Shankar Shiva, not Lakshmi, even, you know, Uddhava. And what does that Uddhava say? Asamaho charanarenu jishama hangshang. Brindavane kimapi guma lato sadinam yad dushta jam svajanam arjapatam chahitva bejur mukunda parivim shruti birba migyam. That my aspiration is as a creeper, a blade of grass in the soil of Vrindavan. Because there I may get some of, and the Brajagopis, Radharani and Brajagopis are moving in the plane of service. Some of the dust from their holy lotus feet may fall upon me, thereby consecrating my existence. Right? So he prays that way. Uddhava, Raghunath Das Goswami echoes the same prayer. The motto of Sri Gaudiya Math, as sung, composed and sung by Srila Saraswati Thakur. Pujala Ragapat Gaurava Bange Matala Sarujana Bishaya Range. Right? Pujala Ragamarg is worshipable above to us. And Pujala Gaurava Bange. And when there was some misunderstanding about what is Gaurava Bange, some foolish person said, Vidhi Marg, break it. I said to Gurudev, and Gurudev just taking lunch, right? So this other genius comes up with this upasadantic nonsense. When I asked him, what does Gaurava Bhange mean? He said, with folded palms and a bowed head. That's what it means. That is worshipable to us. Right? The higher devotees always expressing their appreciation for the least. And supreme devotee, Srimati Radharani, Srila Rupa Goswami, and identifying her qualities, the Radhastakam, the first verse, Hari Paranakakoti Prishta Parjanta Simha Tatamapi Kalayantam Pramudita Madhurakshi Vaidagya Dikta Guru Mati Guru Kirting Radhika Marchayami. Hari Paranaka Koti Prishta Pardanta Simha, saying, what is her mood? That, so we're talking about the lotus feet, the dust of the lotus feet. It's always telling us to go for the least aspect. So leave it to Sri Rupa to go even finer. So if you're dealing with the lotus feet, that means the lowest and least approach. But if you analyze the lotus feet further, what would be the least aspect of the lotus feet? The nails on them. Haripadanaka. That's me. The nails on the toes of the lotus feet. And he said, Srimati Radharani considers the nails on the holy lotus feet of Krishna to be infinitely superior to her own highest aspect of self, magnified millions of times. So this Madhurakshi, those, if you're intoxicated by this kind of vision, it gives you a hint. That's how she sees it, that the least aspect of Krishna is greater than her highest aspect of self, and its magnitude multiplied millions and millions of times. That's the way to make an approach. So there's, as Guru would say, the Vaishnava and the inspired side of the Vaishnava is the Guru. So devotees, they want to render some so-called personal service. Right? Mahaprabhu, Rupa Goswami, we could say Rupa Goswami also. Yeah. But Mahaprabhu told Rupa Goswami, I want you to go to Vrindavan. And we could say on one level, oh, it's heartbreak. Why, Sri Rupa will be sent, like being sent away almost? No, I want you to, I want to be with you. Yeah, but then you must follow my order, and my order to you is to go to Vrindavan. But in pursuance and realization of this order, you'll always be with me. Right? Guru Maharaj told me that on one of the last times we met. And he also mentioned in that same talk, he said, that association is not based on physical proximity. And he gave the example of lice, right? You know, those that go in your skin, bed bugs. He said, so, you know, they burrow into your skin. He said, so they couldn't be any more intimately related, right? They're literally under your skin. He's saying, but the consciousness of the lice or lie, the singer, lice, and your consciousness, your worlds apart. He said, so physical proximity doesn't mean association. He said, but when the consciousness is the same, then you're connected. And that's why I was saying to someone recently, even the Nirjan Bhajan Bhaktas, so-called, you know, the real, actual Babaji's. Nirjan means without people. Right? They're not alone. Maybe they're without the people of this world. They're with more people than you can imagine. Right? Because they're deeply penetrated in the spiritual world. It's not like they're just lonely and, you know, they have no one to talk to. Guru Maharaj is always engaged in this internal dialogue. Yeah. That means with a multitude of spiritual personalities. When we read the Acharya's commentary, if you read Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur, you begin to feel something like of his personality and a certain type of association that's living, breathing, alive in the commentary. Right? And it's infinitely superior to like trivial interactions with people in this world. So why do we approach the lotus feet of Sri Guru? Right? Really, out of service necessity. That is our intention. That is our aspiration. At the same time, Srila Rupa Goswami says in the Upadeshamritam, that famous slogan, Dadati, Pratigrinati, Guhyam, Akyati, Prichtati, Bhunkte Bhojayate Cheva Sadvidhi Bhakti Lakshanam Sad Bhakti. Anyway, so he's saying with two parts, so six. Anyway, he's saying, what is the loving priti? It means loving exchange between devotees. And we can say with guru and disciple, dadati patigranati. Dadati means like giving and receiving things. I mentioned the other day, we had the good fortune. We were in Los Angeles in 1971. And it was before certain things were established. And Prabhupada would just go for a walk in the morning. They'd drive him somewhere and then he'd walk around the park. And then when he'd come back, he'd get out of the car. And we're all waiting in front of the temple. There's around 30 of us. And we all had flowers. And Prabhupada would get out of the car, and there was someone walking next to him who had a basket of flowers. And Prabhupada would walk up to you, like, look at you, you know, saying like, Hari Bol or Hare Krishna. And you'd hand Prabhupada a flower. Prabhupada would take the flower, smile, like, put it in the basket, and then he'd give you a flower. So you can imagine we were very happy. So, giving and receiving. The devotees, sometimes they give a gift out of love and affection or appreciation, and it's reciprocated. And guhyam akyati prichati, and saying that guhyam means like secret or confidential, or in this context, revealing your mind and your heart. That can be done. That's a not that the guru is not a therapist, right? A Diksha guru is not a therapist. Maybe a little bit. You know, spiritual therapist. There you go. Psychotherapy. Dealing with psychos. I mean, psyche, the soul. Correct that. So we have to, it's not that, so everything that comes in our head, like the mind is a mirror, a reflective instrument, like a mirror, anything and everything that comes in your mind, you need to tell your guru about that. You know, I had a dream last night. It was really weird. You know, it's guhyam, it means like what's really, how would you say, troubling the heart that needs to be resolved out of service necessity. Right? Not some mundane aspect of one's life. Right? But we're aspiring servitors, and there may be something in our hearts that's troubling us and preventing us from serving properly. But you hear in this, what's described by Rupa Goswami, he's saying this is amongst devotees. So it can be guru and disciple, but also God brothers and God sisters. Right? And what was the last one? Dadati Prani. Oh, Bhunkte Bhujai. And that they take prasadam together. That's why it's an important thing, right? That we do. And you see, like here also, when we have our little celebrations on the devotees' birthdays, like today was Bhaninath's birthday, right? You would never know it. So how did we know? Okay. I see. So another devotee, there you go, that's the exchange, that loving exchange. Another devotee said, oh, it's his birthday, so, and then we're all informed, and then we express some appreciation to him. Right. But so, dealing with the guru, we should be careful not to make the guru our servant. Right. We may hear from Srila Guru Maharaj that really the position of guru is to serve the disciples. But knowing that, we shouldn't take advantage of it. And just for context, he said, just as when the pujari or the cook, pujari, sevak, they take some fruit, they wash the fruit, peel it, cut it, present it very nicely, put it on a plate, and offer to the deity. He said, so you could say in a sense that that devotee is the servant of that fruit. So in a similar way, saying, what's the parallel? The guru, through instructions, is cleansing the disciple, making them fit to be offered to Krishna. So it's a type of service. But and the guru may think like that. I'm here on behalf of my Gurudev to serve these extensions of him who have appeared in the form of disciples. Prabhupada said that, Guru Maharaj said the same thing, Srila Gurudev. That really the guru sees the disciples as extensions of his guru, thinking, I can't do the desired service myself, and my guru has mercifully appeared in the form of so many assistants. So I'm their servant. But knowing that, we shouldn't think that way about the guru. Rather, we're trying to offer ourselves in service. So if there's something we need to consult with to make ourselves better at service, that can be there. But we should, you know, avoid trivial matters. And I know in my own case that there was some period where Prabhupada needed a new servant, and he was in New York, so I had like my 15 minutes of being his, you know, servant, and I thanked the Lord he didn't pick me because I wouldn't have been able to do the desired service, you know. But I remember something that happened. So he's sitting like you are, just on a little mat. I'm on the other, serving him prasadam, and there's no one else around. And he's asking me all these questions. He's asking me questions. I'm not asking him questions. And through, he knew, like Krishna sent someone who knows everything that's going on in this temple. So he will tell me the truth. So when the leaders come in and say something less than the truth, I'll know, I already know all the answers. So it was like he was happy that I was there. But anyway, you know, he asked me different things. I've told this before. At one point when I said I was preaching to Indians, and that caught his interest, because he's also looking for the devotees to send to India. And I said, but Prabhupada, sometimes preaching to them is difficult because I'm trying to preach to them and then they'll say something like, oh, I know what is Krishna. And Prabhupada, he laughed, like, he said, that is their disease. Like, put a sweet ball in his mouth. It's a disease to think you know Krishna. Janantu eva janantu kim bahukcha name prabho brahmastuti again. Promise, and others may know, and I have nothing to say on this matter, very little. But of course, in the form of these beautiful prayers, 40 or 50 prayers that form the basis of Gaudiya ontology, he's saying, I don't have much to say. But little inspiration came to him. But then at one point, and this shows you about, tell you something about wanting to be a servitor and overthinking something or not doing the desired service. So then Prabhupada says, he goes, I want a toothpick, you know. And there were no toothpicks, but I happened to know where some were. So I bow down and said, I'll be back, you know. I go out the door and there's around 150 devotees on the other side of this door. Right, they're all waiting in the hallway. And like I come out, and they're all looking at me, and I say, Prabhupada wants a toothpick. And they all go like, ah! And they just start running in different directions. And I ran upstairs, and my heart's beating. I saw this box of toothpicks, you know. And I felt like, bring back one toothpick? I just couldn't decide with it. So I like grabbed a handful of them. And then I thought, oh, I can't just, I have to wash them first. I can't just hand them off, you know, like that's our system, right? I run the toothpicks on and then I go, oh, now they're all full of water. I'm like running back down, it's like shaking all the water off. You know, like, oh no. You know, then I like open the door, come back in and like very calmly pay my dandavats. And then like I hold out my palm and there's around 40 toothpicks in it. And Prabhupada says, takes one and he goes, why you have brought so many? And I said, for tomorrow? And he goes like, yeah. And I thought, I am not the person for this job. So I maybe we that you think it's the dream engagement, but we don't, you know, Vaishnavara Kriya Mudra Vigya, we don't want to observe the Vaishnava, familiarity breeds contempt. That, so sometimes, depending on who we are, little distance may be healthy for our appreciation. So, and again, if we stay on theme of what we said originally, Krishna's in the background. No one, Guru Maharaj would say, Yoga Maya sees all the servitors. She's aware of who should come forward to do this service and that. So no one is being neglected or overlooked. So just be happy with whatever level of association and service we do get. Hare Krishna.